Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, Oogie Boogie Bash reservations are live, Disney Legends are announced, Disney Plus Day events at Disneyland.
Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique is reopening, fun new merchandise, we continue our discussion with Philander and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Howdy, partners! For your safety, remain seated with your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast, and be sure to watch your ears. If any of you folks are wearing hats or glasses, best remove them, because Tag and Teresa have the wildest ride in the wilderness!
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of August 24th, 2022. I'm Tag Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to thank all of our current weekly tiers for supporting the show. Without your support, DL Weekly would not be possible. Your support ensures that the podcast will continue and that we can make it to the parks more often to bring you the latest news and information right from the parks. If you would like to become an official weekly tier, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
We have some details about the D23 meetup, which is only a couple weeks away at this point, isn't it? 2.5 weeks, something like that?
Just around the corner.
Yeah, it's going to be here before we know it. We are going to have a weekly tier meetup at the Disneyland Hotel at the fireplace near Trader Sam's on Saturday, September 10th from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. It is a D23 day, so D23 usually wraps up around 7. Give us a little bit of time to get over there, and then we have early the next morning, so 8 to 10 it is. If you could stop by for any amount of time, please feel free. We're also going to be at the expo the entire weekend, so if you see us around, feel free to say hi.
Well, it's that time again for our friend Eric over at Concierge to catch us up on other Disney news.
Hello, everyone. This is Eric Johnson with Concierge, and welcome to the D180. While Tag and Teresa cover all things Disneyland, in the D180, we take a spin around the rest of the Disney universe, and we do it in 180 seconds. Let's jump right in. We start our journey this week all around the world. Adventures by Disney just announced a large amount of discounted trips to a bevy of locations this fall and winter. In case you missed a few of those Disney lessons in school, Adventures by Disney is the arm of the company that arranges guided tours to some of the world's most coveted locations. ABD is consistently the highest rated experience in the Disney travel world, and it's not hard to figure out why. Each vacation includes expert Disney travel guides who guide you through VIP destinations, arranging unique experiences at every turn. The reason I'm excited about Adventures by Disney this week is because they just released a series of massive discounts throughout the fall and winter. For very select dates, each guest can book these experiences for $350 less than usual. Want to get the VIP treatment in Hollywood and Disneyland? The Southern California experience takes you through Hollywood history, the Jim Henson Studios, Disney Studios, and the Disneyland Resort itself over 6 days and nights. Okay, I get it. Not exotic enough for you. How about 7 days and 6 nights in Costa Rica? For about the same price as the Disneyland excursion, you can go zip lining through a rainforest and explore a volcano site. Too close to home? I hear you. Let's talk 10 days in Australia. Trek across the faraway continent, visiting the Great Barrier Reef, Melbourne, and Sydney. All right, that's not long enough. I want my vacation to last. Stay in the same vicinity for a 12-day visit to New Zealand. Immerse yourself in the splendor of this land and learn from the culture of its inhabitants. I hear you, not enough beaches. Okay, try the Adventures by Disney 12-day trip through Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. Cruise down the real Mekong River, not the one you see on a certain jungle cruise, and spend a few days exploring these ancient lands, enjoying the splendor of their beaches, mountains, and cultural demonstrations. How about trips to Europe? Discounted tours will take you through Italy's classic Roman destinations over 8 days. Tours through Rome, Tuscany, Florence, and Venice are sure to delight over the week-long tour. You could also opt for a week in England and France, visiting crown jewels, the Tower of London, and French museums. Wave to the Mona Lisa for me during your private tour of the Louvre. There are so many destinations open at a discounted rate through January 2023. Give your favorite travel planner a call and see if you can pull together the adventure of a lifetime. Phew. Okay. How about some park stuff? Let's go back to that, huh? Epcot announced that some of their fan favorite tours are also returning this October. Experience the science behind living with the land on the Behind the Seeds tour. This tour is advertised during the ride itself, and it's been a little while since we've been able to go on it. Enjoy life in the bubbles with Fish in the Seas with Nemo and friends on either their scuba experience or a swim with the dolphins experience. All three attractions, land and sea, will be available for booking starting August 22nd for dates beginning in October. If you happen to have a trip scheduled at this time, consider the step up to a VIP tour experience like these. And that's 180 seconds. I hope you enjoyed our quick spin around the rest of the Disney universe. If you would like to learn more about these Disney adventures or just have a few questions, please come on over. Visit the social media and websites of both DL Weekly and us, their official travel planners, concierge. We look forward to planning something special for you and yours. I am Eric Johnson, and this has been your D180.
Well, thanks, Eric. Now let's get to the news. Reservations are now open for the Oogie Boogie Bash dessert party. Guests will get to enjoy some Halloween-themed desserts and beverages while sitting in a preferred seating area for the Frightfully Fun Parade. Price is $89, which includes tax and gratuity per guest.
They have not teased us with what these wonderful desserts are going to be or what they look like yet. We might have to wait until the first partygoers go and experience and share their photos and share their experience. But I'm a little surprised that they brought this back, but then I'm also not surprised that they brought this back. To me, this price point seems a little high for what you get for a dessert party, $89.
Isn't that the price of the World of Color dessert party?
It might be. I don't know. Dessert parties are a little tough for me because you're right. They're always priced higher than what the dining packages are. And I really enjoy the dining packages. I do think that, for me, it's a good value. It's usually good food, good location. Of course, you've got, you know, there's some that are better than others, of course, like anything. But the dessert parties are just a little tough for me. This one, I think, is a little tougher to justify just because you've already paid your ticket price to get into the Oogie Boogie Bash. So then paying an additional $89 for the dessert party on top of it is hard financially. But then also, there's just so much cool stuff at Oogie Boogie Bash that I would feel bad like taking time away from experiencing the rest of the party to like just be at the dessert party. Does that make sense?
That's how it feels like to me. I don't want to be, you know, it's kind of like we talked, you know, a few weeks ago about the VIP tour and how you don't want to spend an hour of your VIP tour, you know, eating lunch or something. It's kind of how I feel about these dessert parties and stuff at Oogie Boogie Bash. Plus, From what you were saying with your experience of Oogie Boogie Bash, you had a dining package, a few years ago, that the parade viewing spot wasn't, you know, exactly what you had hoped it would be.
The one perk for the dessert party is you are sitting up and you do get to sit, whereas the rest of the parade viewing area, including the Wine Country Trattoria's area that we'll talk about next, is just on the ground. So you're either sitting on the cement or you're standing. So at least you're sitting at a table enjoying your desserts, kind of with a higher view of the parade. So it should be less, you know, less obstructed view for you as well. So that is definitely a plus. Well, the Oogie Boogie Bash dining parade package at the Wine Country Trattoria is also live for reservations. This year, guests can choose from a lunch or dinner package time. Pricing is $59, which does not include tax or gratuity, and includes a 3-course prefix meal as well as a separate reserve viewing area for the parade.
This sounds like a much better deal. $59.
We did this last year. You've forgotten, but we did this last year.
And that's fine. This one was good. And I think I'm just saying between this and dessert party, this is a much better deal. Although I do think this is interesting because the lunch and dinner prices are the same. But they offer all the same food for lunch and dinner, right?
Yeah, it's the same menu. So, but this, I'm assuming, but this is interesting because so both times I've done Oogie Boogie Bash 2019 and 2021, I did do the dining package at Wine Country Trattoria, and I thought the food was very good. Last year, the dessert was a little, I don't know, it was a little too much. It was almost like they mushed like five different types of desserts together. And
I loved it.
You did. Yeah, it was a little much for me. It was not my favorite Disney dessert. Anyways, I'm getting myself off topic, but I think it's a good value. But the thing that's new this year, I don't remember them doing this. It used to only be dinner. And I want to say the earliest you could get your reservation was at like 3 p.m. And now they have added lunch to the mix, too. So I think that'll be interesting, because this is not something when you go online to make your reservation, you're just making a reservation for the restaurant. You're not making a reservation specifically for this dining package. So when you get to the restaurant, you have to let your server know, you have to let the hostess know, the hostess know when they check you in that you're interested in doing the parade package. So with it being now open for a longer period of time, I'm wondering if they have a larger parade viewing area that accommodates for more people, or if you're going to possibly run into the issue of if you get there, like, are they going to run out of space sooner since it's since it's more open? My hope is that the reserved viewing area for the parade is just larger this go around. We'll find out soon, though.
Yeah, I feel like that would be something that they should do. I also thought it was funny. They said that the cost is $59 for guests age 10 up, $35 for guests 3 to 9. And there's a $10 upcharge if you want the ribeye.
It was worth it. I think that's what we got. It was pretty yummy. I did. Yep, it was pretty yummy. I like this. I think it's a better price than the dessert package. But the other thing that I really like about this is that I can do this dining package before the party even starts. So I don't feel like I'm losing party time by taking part in the dinner or the lunch dining package. So that's a big plus, a big perk for me. I'm not sure. I did look this morning. There were two reservation times open for the date that we're going to Oogie Boogie Bash. However, they were earlier than park hop jumping time was, and we are starting in Disneyland that day. So unless I change your reservations, or unless dining reservations open later in the evening, I'm not sure if this is something we'll do this year or not. They do also offer walk up. So it is possible, even if you don't have a reservation, you can always check at the host stand and see if they have availability or not. So I'm not sure if this is something we'll do this year or not, but I'm excited to hear other people's experiences.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good time last time, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
With the D23 Expo coming up in just a couple of weeks, Disney has announced the people who will be inducted as Disney Legends. Strap in, folks. It's quite the list. This year, Anthony Anderson from Law & Order, Kristen Bell from the Frozen series, Chadwick Boseman from Black Panther, Disney Imagineer Robert Coltrane, Patrick Dempsey from Grey's Anatomy, Robert Price Bob Foster, former Walt Disney Productions Real Estate Vice President, Josh Gad from Frozen and Beauty and the Beast, Jonathan Groff from Hamilton and Frozen, author and documentarian Don Hahn, Disney Imagineer Doris Hardoon, Idina Menzel from Frozen, executive music producer Chris Montan, Ellen Pompeo from Grey's Anatomy, and Tracy Ellis Ross from Black-ish. Including these honorees, 304 people have been named Disney Legends.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm very excited. I think the person that I, as they were going through the people that I was the most excited that's going to be receiving this award, was Don Hahn, and then also Robert Coltrane, just because I feel they're people that, you know, it's not like they're not the flashy celebrities like we have on this list, but I do love and really enjoy their contributions. And Robert Coltrane, the more I learn about him, the more amazed I am with him. And I'm just excited to learn more and more and more about him. But he's been a part of a lot of our most favorite and most memorable attractions at the park. So very excited for that. And then, of course, Don Hahn, he's just as incredible as well. Who are you the most excited? Well, I can't not say Jonathan Groff, because I love him as a human. So I was very excited about that. And I thought it was very, very touching that Chadwick Boseman will also be being honored. Who are you excited for?
I thought it was funny when I was writing this list, because they separated them out. But it was funny that Kristen Bell, Idina Menzel, and Jonathan Groff, and
Josh Gad,
it was like everybody from Frozen becomes a legend this year.
All of Frozen. Yes.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. I will tell you, for seeing in person, if we get into this, I hope that a bunch of these people, to be honest, are in there. But Jonathan Groff would be one that I really would love to be in the same room as. You know, Josh Gad, I think, is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm with you with like Don Hahn. I liked him because he did. He was involved in the some of those.
Yes.
Disney documentaries around Disney Plus, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a solid year for Disney legend inductees. It's going to be a fun time.
Disney Plus Day is coming up soon, and the parks are getting in on the celebrations. On September 8th, guests will get to take part in special character meet and greets, complimentary PhotoPass photo ops, and even blue churros. Disney Plus subscribers and their guests will also be able to enter the parks at 7:30 a.m. You can get in on some of the fun from home, too, with Disney PhotoPass lenses, which will be available through Snapchat, so you can get your Disney on from home, too.
Ooh. Yeah, Disney Plus Day, for some reason, this thing always seems to, like, pop up on me out of nowhere, and they always have, like, a lot of good stuff coming. Obviously, I know we're talking about the parks, but some of the things that they've announced that are coming that day are, of course, Thor, Love, and Thunder. Mm-hmm. They have a Making of Thor, the Assembled series. One that I didn't even know was coming, but I'm very excited, is the Obi-Wan Kenobi, A Jedi's Return.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited for some of these things. So, but yes, we unfortunately, I think, are missing that day, right? That's our travel day.
That's our travel day. So we will not be able to go to the parks to enjoy Disney Plus Day, nor will we be able to probably enjoy Disney Plus because we'll be working and then traveling.
Yes.
But we hopefully I'm curious because I feel like the celebration's going to continue on through the weekend, and they might be some special things at the Disney Plus booth and area during the expo to celebrate this as well. I mean, it was 2019 expo that you and I signed up for Disney Plus. We didn't even really quite know what it was or what we were getting ourselves into when we signed up, because it was that a really amazing deal for expo attendees to sign. And I think we signed for 3 years, so that's going to be coming up, and we're going to be
November 11th it expires.
Yep, we're going to be paying the regular price because we got some really
It was like $3 price. A month or some ridiculousness.
It was something really low. But and Pinocchio, the live action Pinocchio is also coming out on Disney Plus on September 8th. So I think I know what I will be watching on the plane ride.
Not to derail us like I do, but the D23, if you're a D23 member and you get the magazine, there is a great article in there about the upcoming Hocus Pocus 2, which I immediately read when I opened it yesterday. I set the magazine aside and I kind of let it sit there for a while. I had to read this article. It was really great. I'm very excited for this movie. Well, Calling All Princesses and Knights, the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique, opens this week on August 25th. The Fairy Godmother's Apprentices will once again be offering these magical makeovers. It appears that there have been some updates to the package and pricing, so be sure to check out the link in our show notes.
Yeah, so it was actually the trip in 2019 that I went to Oogie Boogie Bash that I got to hang out with my cousin's little girls while they were getting their magical makeovers done at the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique. So I got to kind of see the whole process from start to finish, but also that included, what the different packages were in that kind of selection process. And so when I was looking at the website today, there's a ton of package. I don't think there was this many packages before. There's 10 packages now.
Oh, my
goodness. I don't remember there being 10 packages before. So they range from the carriage package, which starts at $99.95 plus tax. And it goes all the way up to the signature dress collection.
Let me stop you right there. The cheap one is actually $19.95.
Oh, yes. The night package. That's actually a great deal.
Right.
For the night package, because the night package is hairstyling with gel, a sword, and a shield for $19.95. You can't even buy the sword and the shield for $19.95. Mm-hmm. So that's a great deal. But then the Princess Signature Dress Collection is the top tier, which is $450 plus tax.
Ooh.
But I feel like they've included more stuff in these packages than what they had previously offered before, because even the lowest tier now comes with a t-shirt. And when we went, and my two little cousins, they got the sash, but there was not a t-shirt. They were able to add extra things, like different things that they could put in their hair that were a little bit extra and that sort of stuff. But yeah, they didn't have the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique t-shirt that now seems to come with each package. So that's, yeah, so they did a little switcheroo and change up there.
I have to say that the Young Knights have the best deal here, because there was the intro one for $20 and the Deluxe Knight package is $80, and it comes with a knight costume, hairstyle with gel, and a mighty sword and shield. So
a mighty sword and shield, yes.
I wish I had a little kid that I could have go and get knighted up, because I think it'd be so adorable. I love seeing... We're going to have to swing by when this is back open and gander at some of these amazing
see all of the princesses and knights coming out of the boutique all freshly done. Yes. And it's fun, too, because I could see this being a really fun thing to do with your little ones, because some of these packages... They even come with portrait sessions.
Oh, wow.
Some of the higher tiered ones even have portrait sessions. So, that's kind of a fun thing. But anyways.
What a fun, birthday present for, a little kid or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Some very special event. This would be such a cool experience, I'm sure. And I just remember watching the girls' face as they... got to, because they're doing the makeover, and they're not allowing your child to see themselves in the mirror until they're all finished. And so I just remember the look on their faces when they turned around and had the magic mirror show them what they looked, what their new do looked like and all that. And they were just so excited, and they were just glowing, and that glow just continued for the rest of the day. It was so, so special and so cute. With many of the new Marvel shows on Disney Plus, we've been seeing some of the new characters hanging out over an Avengers campus. Well, with the recent release of She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, something a little different has made its way into the parks. New themed benches, much like the one on the promo image, have popped up. There are two of these green benches, one across from the Hyperion Theater dining area and the other by Pym Tasting Lab. There is a fun twist to the benches. They have been dented, so it is made to appear that She-Hulk had been sitting on them and has left her mark.
I did not look at this earlier, but I'm looking at it now. That's clever.
Yeah. And the thing that's fun about that is, maybe at first glance, you're like, aw, Disney, why is She-Hulk only getting a bench?
Right.
Okay. It's not like they just painted a bench green and slapped something on the back to make it, in theme for She-Hulk. No, there's some creative and some fun that went on with that. The other thing, too, she's an attorney, so she's probably very, very busy and may not have as much free time to just be hanging out to visit with us in Avengers campus.
That's true.
As well.
Did you know that phone number works, by the way?
That's what I saw. We need to call it. When we're there, we've got to call it. Or I suppose we could just look at the photo and call it.
It'll be more fun to do it there, though.
Yes, yes, definitely.
Well, the jolly big guy is coming to have breakfast with guests this year. Santa himself will be eating breakfast with guests at Catal Restaurant. The event will include a meet and greet and photos with Santa, a stuffed animal, and personalized stockings for children 10 and under, a family-style breakfast, and bottomless mimosas, hot cocoa, carolers, and more. There will be limited dates in November and December, and will be $110 per adult and $50 per child, 3 to 10. Visit the link in the show notes to reserve your place now.
Isn't this just wild? We haven't even started Halloween yet, and we're already having to plan ahead for the December holidays. It's just crazy. But that's just this time of year, right? We get Halloween, and then just boom, you just kind of go through the rest of the holidays, and next thing you know, it's January. So it makes sense. But this sounds like, again, another fun event. If this was, if I was local, I could see going and taking kids and enjoying the magic. And the thing that's nice about this too is it's downtown Disney, so you don't need a ticket, you don't need a reservation. You need a dining reservation. You don't need a park reservation.
Sure.
In addition to the ticket, so a little bit more affordable from that sense. You just have to. It's just the dining experience.
Do you know what surprises me? I'm looking at the reservation calendar for this.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who would like to have breakfast with Santa the morning of his big trip, there are reservations on December 24th from 8 a.m. to 12:45 p.m. So,
oh, wow.
You could have breakfast with the big man on his big day.
Wow.
It's pretty exciting.
Bet you he'll be fueling up extra that day.
I mean, good thing it's a buffet, right?
Yes. This week, Disney is celebrating World Princess Week. To kick off the celebration, Grammy Award-winning artist Brandy performed the theme song of the Ultimate Princess Celebration called Starting Now. Brandy performed it in front of Sleeping Beauty Castle at Disneyland. The video of her performance is linked in our show notes.
So I read this limited article that we have linked in the show notes, and there wasn't, like, I don't know anything about World Princess Week. They didn't really say much other than Brandy came and sung this song.
So the other thing that's going on for World Princess Week, there's all sorts of different treats that are popping up around the resort that are themed to the different princesses. Of course, meet and greets. There are, I think there's like one or two photo ops. There's a special magic key holder photo op over in DCA that I believe you get to go get your picture, your photo taken with Princess Minnie to celebrate. So there's just, you know, that kind of fun stuff all around. But the whole reason for this is to highlight the impact of Disney princesses and the courage and kindness that they inspire in all fans around the world. So I think that's a very sweet message. And the Starting Now theme song was actually, I believe it was produced and created specifically for this too. So
that's cool. A new tiki mug will be swimming into Trader Sam's this week, and I guarantee you it'll be swimming right out just as quick as it swam in. The Monstro tiki mug will be available on August 26th on mobile order only. Interested buyers should set their alarms early. The mobile order sale will start as early as 6 a.m. with pickup windows at Trader Sam's between 7 a.m. and 3 p.m. This thing is amazing.
It is so cool. So not that I need another thing to start collecting, but man, each time they come out with these tiki mugs, all I think about is how cool it would have these have a Disney tiki mug collection, because they are just, they're beautiful. They're so well done. You and I do both have a Disney tiki mug. One of our awesome listeners gifted us with the Hatbox Ghost tiki mug that came out. Oh, gosh. That may have been like 2019 when it came out. Yeah. And beautiful. I love it so much. And every time they come out with another Disney themed one, they're just great. Monstro, so the tiki mug was actually kind of almost looked like it was wood or maybe like bone. It's kind of like a tannish brownish color. Monstro, however, is painted and colored blue. So he's blue like a whale, and he's got some white waves at the base of it too. But it's just
I don't know how practical it is to drink out of, but it looks amazing.
It would be fun. You just straw. That's all. You just put a straw in it. It's fine.
Perfect.
But we do not have any information on what the price for this mug will be. But if this is something you're interested in, it sounds like it's one day only to try and get your hands on it. So, it does say here guests will be allowed to grab a max of 2 mugs per order. So that's the other thing to keep in mind as well, is you can't go get one for you and all 10 of your friends. Just two per person per order.
That's good.
Well, speaking of new merch, a shiny new popcorn bucket has been spotted at the parks. The iridescent purple bucket is available for purchase for Magic Key holders. The bucket is $18.25. However, unlike previous Magic Key or AP buckets, this one does not advertise that it has free or lower priced refills. So this is just a shiny, fancy Magic Key bucket.
I did see this as well. This was another one of those pieces of merch that just kind of popped up that looked kind of cool. This is kind of neat. It's that iridescent thing, like you said. In the pictures I've seen, it's a little pinkish.
It's like a
to me.
Pink, yeah, it's like a pink purple, kind of like a fuchsia.
Yeah, it's definitely eye-catching. That's for sure.
I'm sure in the sun, this thing probably
is blinding.
Or it's very beautiful, depending on how the sun hits it. I am a little sad that they're not offering the refills again, because that was such a fun and such a good deal. When they did that last time, you had actually picked up a popcorn bucket last year when they did that. That was actually a little bit better style of a bucket to do refills with, because that was the style of bucket that had a lid and it wasn't just one of the fancy decorative buckets. This is more of a fancy decorative bucket.
And I feel like they should be doing this more often with the popcorn thing, because I'm sorry, folks. I used to work at a movie theater. I know movie theaters charge outrageous amounts of money for popcorn, but it's super cheap. So I think that would be a real fun thing. That would sell a lot of popcorn buckets.
Oh, yeah, it would.
Well, some would say that one of the best things about staying in a Disney hotel is the bath products. Well, there is some bad news on that front. H2O Plus will be discontinuing the brand at the end of 2022. No word yet on what will replace the brand as supplies dwindle.
This wasn't something I would normally include in the news, but I just felt like this was so important and so like such a ripple effect and so impactful. It's one of the things that a lot of Disney guests look forward to. It's something that before I had stayed at a Disney hotel, I had heard about these products and I just really wanted to try them because people raved about, oh, the shampoos and the bath products at the Disney hotels are great. You got to try it. And it was just this kind of like super special Disney thing.
And who bought a pack? This guy.
Yes. Yes. You and you. Yeah. The first time we stayed at a Disney hotel and you tried it, we're in the gift shop buying you the full size set so you could take it home. Yeah. So this is seems like it's a small thing, but I feel like it's a big thing. So I felt like we needed to let everybody know. But the thing that I've really been kind of going back and forth in is since this was such a staple, such a well-known, such a loved part of the Disney hotel and cruise line experience, I do not envy the person that has to find the replacement product have to put in its place. I mean, not that Disney wants to get in the bath market industry, but part of me is almost like, does Disney just somehow figure out how to do this themselves so they can continue doing it, you know, continue offering that product? Because it was, they kind of went hand in hand, and so many people only knew of the brand because of its association with Disney. Yep. Well, for sure, people in Disney community, that's how I knew of the brand, was because of its association
with
Disney.
I'm just so surprised because it seems like even if you just take into account Disney buying the stuff, like that's a huge sale constantly of the hotels and everything.
Yeah,
why? I don't know why you would discontinue that brand unless, you know, why would you not just do it as a, you know, a brand specific for Disney or something? I don't know.
Your attention, please. DL Weekly Trivia is now leaving for a Grand Circle tour of the Magic Kingdom. With stops at New Orleans Square, Mickey's Toontown, and Tomorrowland. All Weekly Tiers, board!
Welcome to Trivia Land, where we've got some great listener-submitted questions lined up for you tonight. How you feeling? You think you've got some great knowledge racked up in your brains and you're ready to go?
I don't know. Last week was pretty tough. Tag did a good job, but it was a pretty tough
week.
We'll see.
Was
James not nice to you?
He was nice to me.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm glad James was nice to you.
Inadvertently, anyway.
Oh, all right. Well, then, let's start off with a question from listener Chris Y. What animals can be seen on Pirates of the Caribbean?
A lot of them. Okay. So let's kind of go through. So in the beginning, we've got like there's seagulls and crabs.
Oh, yeah. Crabs, seagulls.
There's an octopus.
Yep. In the hallway. Yep. Octopus.
There's cats, pigs,
chickens.
There's a
parrot,
donkey,
dog. There's a lot of animals in it.
They've got seagulls, crabs, octopus, cats, pigs, chickens, donkey, dog, parrot. That is all that's coming to mind at this moment.
Yes, I concur.
All right. Is that your final answer?
Final answer.
All right. And your second question submitted by listener Donna S. Who was the first, quote, regular, end quote, person to buy a ticket and enter Disneyland?
Oh, I don't remember their name. It was a man. That's all I know. I don't remember what his name is.
Well, you had a 50-50 chance there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The first official, like the ticket number one was purchased by Roy, but I don't remember what the name of the actual guest was. That's terrible. We'll know it when we hear it.
Yeah.
Is that your final answer?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All right.
Not a very good one, but yes.
Question number three, submitted by listener Chrissy A. What was the first movie to be filmed in Disneyland, not a Disney film?
I feel like somewhere in my mind I know this too, but...
I don't know.
It's a great question.
I'm stumped. This is a good question.
Man, we've got two not even guess questions.
Yep, nope, we're doing real well this week.
Did you expect this poorly of a turnout, Bern?
For this question, yeah, definitely. I had a fun time vetting this one. I mean, it was an easy vet because the question or the answer popped right up, but... then reading deeper into it and learning more, it's an interesting, like, you know, learning more about it was really fun. I enjoyed this question. And your fourth and final regular round question submitted by listener Cooper C. How many steam locomotives are run in Disneyland, and what are their names?
We had this before, or something similar. It's there's five, isn't
I think
there?
There's five, yep.
There's mm-hmm. the CK Holiday.
Isn't there something
the
Ridley?
Ward Kimball, the E.P. Ripley.
Yep, E.P. Ripley, that's it.
The Ward Kimball, the CK Holiday.
Are there ones that are just like, not engine number, right? They've got actual names. It's not like engine number five.
No, I think they all have names.
Yeah.
The Fred Gurley.
Oh, yep. Okay. I'm missing one. You said CK Holiday, Ward Kimball, Fred Gurley. There was another one, the Ripley.
The E.P. Ripley. Because they were all like...
They're named after people like from the Santa Fe Railroad.
Wasn't like the newest one named after the Ward Kimball? The Ward Kimball? Did yeah. we put Ward Kimball on there?
Yep, we have okay. Ward Kimball. And engine number five.
All right, final answer?
Yeah.
Final answer.
All right. And your bonus question tonight. Of the previous named trains, what two were present on Disneyland's opening day?
Oh, man.
I feel like the E.P. Ripley and the CK
The Holiday was, yeah, that was my thought, was the Holiday.
Is that your final answer?
That's mine, yeah.
Final answer.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listeners, how did you do listening at home? How do you think Tag and Teresa did? If you stick around until after the discussion topic, we can all find out together.
For our discussion topic this week, we continue our discussion with Philander. Enjoy.
I was going to say, I want to kind of circle back because I feel like you'll have a very interesting perspective on this. You're talking about New Orleans Square and how it's so cool that it has all these like little pockets. Mm-hmm. And of course, we just had a lot of the widening of walkways in New Orleans Square that kind uh-huh. of took away some of that charm.
Teresa's
so
got thoughts on this.
A lot of people have thoughts. So I'm curious what your thoughts are, since you're a super fan, but you're mm-hmm. also somebody that, you know, understands more of the business side of it and you deal with it
these, yeah.
daily. So mm-hmm. what are your thoughts on the, I don't know if this was still considered Project Stardust, but when they kind of had to take away a little bit of that charm to make it easier to go through.
Yeah, and I think for me, it's like trying to find the balance, like have everything be in balance there. So if you are going to do it, find out where it is the most important, because you don't want to lose, you want to gain, you want to have the charm, but you don't want to also have the discomfort for the guests too, because mm-hmm. you have to think about, like, I guess two things really. The super fan who understands that charm on that deep level, because I have, you know, the 10 years that I've spent there, I've seen every kind of Disney person walk through there. The people that don't even know who Walt Disney is, mm-hmm. To the people that like revere it and they bathe in the waters of Rivers of America. Like that place, like, it's the Holy Grail, you know. And you have to find a way to like balance it to where, obviously, the amount of people. Disneyland has a 1955 infrastructure for 2022 crowds. So of all the resorts around the world, Disneyland has to deal with the most issues because it wasn't designed and built for how the world is changing. And that has caused issues with it. I mean, even a big one is just assisting guests that have disabilities.
Yeah.
Oh, because
yeah.
they designed all of those attractions before those, the ADA laws that were created to help guests that need that assistance. And that's been hard for a lot of attractions that were just built well before that time period. And you have to make adjustments to them that, you know, those Imagineers at the time, they weren't thinking about that. And why would they need to, you know, have you ever seen a picture in Disneyland back in the 50s, 60s with a wheelchair in it? Probably yeah. not.
Yeah. Well, and lack of strollers, but we're
yeah,
not gonna go
yeah.
there.
Strollers is another.
Just different world. So mm-hmm. trying to find that line, you know, and I understand it because I know that it's necessary to help the park, help people move to the park, because what we don't want is frustrating experiences, because the charm that you all have for it in certain cases, that will always be there. Even after we make small little touches and picks and adjustments to it, that will always be there. But we also can't make it so where the guest that's coming in for the first or second time of their lives is having trouble getting around. It's like layout issues, because we have to convince the first timer to come back, which is a very powerful thing to do. Like, you all understand it, and it will, despite all the changes, but it will always have its charm, because there are some things that will never change about Disneyland. The Main Street will always be there, you know. I highly doubt we'll ever be getting rid of Haunted Mansion or Pirates of the Caribbean, despite the fact all the times we'll make adjustments and add and take away from it. Those will always be there. But the first person, the first time, they're coming without the charm. They have an idea that has been sold to them by us, one, Disney, and then two, the super fans. Oh my God, Disneyland is the best place in the world. They're like, okay, you have convinced me. I'm finally going to go. I'm going to, you know, spend the money. I'm going to go down there. And now we have to convince them that the money was worth it and was well spent, you know. And it sometimes can be tough for people because they see it very differently. It's almost like they need you to take them so that you can see it that way, because they are going to look at it from a very different perspective than we are, you know, to showcase, you know, and I'm not even talking about logistics, but then pointing out the charm of this place, because in certain cases, it will just, the charm will get them on their own because Disneyland is charming inherently on its own. But in other cases, people need to be shown it. So I don't mind the small changes. I just think they need to be very purposefully placed, I think. Kim Irvine usually does a pretty good job with that because she studied under people like her mom, you know, and the Imagineers of the time periods like Claude Coates, Mark Davis, you know, and she is able to look at it with an eye towards history. And the Imagineers, which I think people may forget sometimes, they are fans like us. You know, they all learned under, you know, Tony's learning under Claude, you know, Joe Rohde had to learn from someone, like they studied under these people and they teach the new generation now. So despite the fact, like, you know, Joe Rohde just retired and Kevin Rafferty's retired, but now you have the next generation coming up, people like Zach Ridley and Scott Drake and Sherita Carter. They all learned from all these other people. You know, Sherita Carter helped design Runaway Railway with Kevin Rafferty as his last project. So now she's, you know, bringing us Princess and the Frog, you know, and that's her first big project. And Scott Drake is handling a lot of the, you know, his first big project was Tron. Now he's been given the reins to do Marvel for the park. So like they all are fans and love these things almost as just as much as they do. And they, of course, have an agenda. Like there's a reason money's being spent to do these things, but we have to kind of trust in them. You know, and that can be hard for change because, you know, Disneyland has to alter. If we don't do that, we're going against the stuff that Walt was saying in that quote, you know, that those words came out of his mouth, you know, about what he wanted. You know, he has very specific, you know, things. And, you know, people saying that Walt wouldn't like Star Wars and stuff like that, we don't know that. Like, he wasn't there for that.
Right.
He would have loved it, you know. So the alterations, I think, are fine with me, but just the placing of them is very important. So, like, they widen the bridge to get into Frontierland.
Yeah.
No big deal. You know, that's, you know, I think even other than the three of us and a few others, who would even know that, mm-hmm. you know, but other places, you know, like the alleyways of New Orleans Square, those are specific because that land is designed to look like a certain place, you know, even like I'm very happy with Galaxy's Edge. So they obviously, there's obviously massive walkways, but the marketplace has a very quaint, tiny charm to it. Like they very specifically, despite the fact that it was going to be nuts, because it is on busy days, the marketplace has those little pod shops that are there. So like the Toydarian Toy Makers, the Outfitters, the Creature Stall. And that is actually, in theory, not conducive to a masses coming in. You know, those shops are almost like little holes in the wall.
Yeah,
but they did that still knowing that people were going to be packing themselves into that place. And I like that they still have that kind of, like they will never make a whole land like that, but that they still have the go with all to say, let's make this look and feel like a marketplace that you would see in Morocco or Istanbul or Marrakesh, where Imagineering actually went to go study places like that to make that marketplace feel otherworldly. So, because even if you've never been to like Morocco, the fact that we live in the States, going to a Moroccan marketplace feels otherworldly. Like it still has human elements and nature and touches to it, but there's a feeling to it that feels otherworldly or very different because you're not used to it. You know, our marketplaces are like the, you know, the farmer's market at the Grove, you know, not like the same, but like the wires and the lampposts and like these little hovels where people are selling the things that they made by hand. So I like that even though we'll make alterations, Imagineering going forward is still has the ability to create these little tiny spaces that are not great for crowd flow at all, but they still add a charm because in certain places the people are, when I've walked people through Galaxy's Edge, the place that some of the places that they're most enthralled by, obviously the Millennium Falcon, of course.
Yeah.
But the park, the people are agog at the marketplace. When you round that corner, either coming from Rise of Resistance or turning past Ronto Roasters, just the look of it. So the wires hanging, the lanterns, the shops on the sides like that, that feeling is like they're like, wow, the design in this place is really beautiful. Because over by Rise of Resistance, it's just a lot of trees and the rocks and it looks beautiful, of course. But that feeling of being inside of this marketplace, the hustle and bustle, it feels like something more. And the fact that you actually have a lot of people in it makes it feel more like that, because marketplaces are busy. People are shopping, they're looking, and that vibe really helps. So the more crowded it is, actually, the more it feels like an actual marketplace, as opposed to if you ran through the marketplace at like 11:30 at night, it won't have that same vibe. It'll have a different vibe because it's dusk or it's nighttime, the lights are on, and you can hear but I like the ambient chatter that you get from not only the sounds that are made in that area, but people just talking about things. It's nice. So I think that's a great way, or probably my very long-winded way of explaining like that. I like that, you know, we are adjusting to help people now, and the crowds that Disneyland could never have anticipated back in the day, but still find places to either keep the charm or create new charm, you know, for future generations. Yeah.
That makes sense. Well, and the nice thing about the marketplace too is, again, it was a design decision. It was very intentional. You need to use the restroom. It's right on the end. So you can just kind of like boop, boop, and you can, but you don't have to go through the tiny crowded area. They also have a second path.
Yeah.
That you can much go more around. Open. You know, so you have that choice of, you know, which way you want to go.
Like if
you
want to be. You could go through the little things or you just go along the riverfront.
Yep.
That,
and same thing, like, you know, front. You have the restroom on the one side and then you have the restaurant on the other side. So you don't have to, they're not forcing you to go through the tight marketplace area to get to probably two of the main draws that people are going to use in that area. Yes, of course, the shops are fun, but like, we don't visit the shop every time we're there, but we probably visit Ronto Roasters every time we're there because they're delicious. And even just the layout of the land, I like that it's not some other big parks, because some other big parks are just like, here's your main highway, and you're just kind of like, boop, boop, boop. I like that it's like a maze. And that you can almost get lost back there.
Yeah, those lands are so important because they create discovery. So like, I love, they create discovery and they create choice, so that everything is not laid out in front of you. It beckons you forward. Kind of like Walt, you know, the weenies that we always talk about like that. And there's no inherent weenie in Galaxy's Edge because they wanted you to find the Millennium Falcon. They could have, in theory, made that the center part of the entire land. But it's a fact that you have to discover it. Like, you know it's there because you've either done your research or you've looked on the map. Oh my God, there's a Millennium Falcon. But the fact that you turn the corner, like you stumble upon this giant ship, and there's a charm to that because they could have made it the first thing you saw when you walked in, or like it's all the way down a long hallway. So kind of like Avengers Campus, if you round it at the front, the Quinjet is the weenie at the very end down there that draws you forward. But the fact that there's choice. So if you come in that main walkway to Galaxy's Edge, so not the one further closest to Fantasyland or the one at the far end by Splash Mountain, you have choice. Like, you can choose to go left or right, and there's no necessarily right or wrong way, but it allows for discovery. There's choice in the manner that you make, and having a land large enough to give you choice is always great because it feels a lot more big or elaborate. Then you walk, let's say you choose to go to the left, like heading towards the marketplace, there's a staircase to go up and there's a ship up there, or you can keep going further down another pathway. Or even coming from Rise of Resistance, go through the marketplace or turn right. Or if you're standing at Millennium Falcon, you can go towards the Ogus Canteen and the Tie Echelon or up the staircase. Like, the fact that this land is so dynamic, and it's nice when you get big spaces like that because it makes it feel even bigger than it actually is. And I love that because that discovery and that choice makes everything feel a lot more dynamic. And when you get lands of that size, which are rare now, you know, the spacing to create something that big is tough. And which one of the main reasons I'm happy that we didn't get the Star Wars Tomorrowland, like, I'm sure I would have loved it because I love Star Wars, but when you can build something from the ground up, you know, I'm always hoping for ground up builds from Imagineering. Their repurposing of rides, their track record has been pretty great. You know, I know people were obviously very not happy about Tower of Terror leaving, but people love Guardians of the Galaxy or Frozen Ever After replacing Maelstrom or Runaway Railway replacing Great Movie Ride. The track record is solid. Like, I wouldn't say none of them are failures. You know, people would grade them. I don't think anyone would give it any of them lower than a C, you know, like that's still passing. Their job is like, you know, to create something. It's got to be at least as good as the other thing or better. You know, we don't want to backstep it. And those have done a great job of doing that. But I love that Galaxy's Edge gives you all these options, you know, and you have to turn corners. I love corners inside of attractions or inside of lands. And I love spaces where you don't know what the next step is, the discovery. So like you only get to ride an attraction once for the first time. Every other time now you have memory of the last one, but the first time. So when they put you in spaces where you don't know what the next move is going to be. So I love that. So in theory, for some cases for me, I love the setup for the attraction even more than they love the actual attraction itself. Because to me, the story is the most important. You know, I love a solid story, the why. You know, why are we here? Why are we doing this? I think everyone can come up with a really great ride design, like an idea for a ride. But you have like, did you all happen to read Kevin Rafferty's book?
Yes.
On Imagineering?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Fantastic book. I love him. If I ever were to go to WDI, it would be show writing. Like he is such a huge deal.
Yeah.
But his whys about an attraction, like the creation, like people like come up with like, they should make a Mary Poppins ride. Okay. Like, okay, what's the story? Give me the why. Like,
right.
You know, let's talk about what's the purpose of the attraction here? Not to just make a ride to make a ride, but give me more. Let's dive into like the why of it. But I love stepping into spaces where the next movement of your journey is still undecisive. You're not sure. So like Rise of Resistance, stepping into the ITS, the ship that you're taking up into space, like, or if people that ride Haunted Mansion for the first time and step into a room and there's no other doors, like what's happening next? Like, you know, you only get that first ride the one time, which is why I always hope that people step into spaces for rides and they're unspoiled, because that reveal of these things is always such a big deal. You know, riding Pirates of the Caribbean and not knowing there's two drops, you know, that kind of like, where are we going? What's next? Or anytime a trackless vehicle, you know, not knowing the next phase of what's happening to you was always so special. And these kind of thought processes that go into land design, attraction design are so important, because that like unknown or the anticipation that is created by all the setup beforehand is always really special. And I love that Galaxy's Edge gives you that, not only the land design, but the attraction as well. Like you're not sure. And I like that, kind of that, not the one by Rise is probably the weakest interest of the three. But the other two give you that choice. You know, you come in, you get the wow moment of not only the rock work, but the TIE fighter on the right, and you have a choice of going straight or to the left, or that middle one, which I think is the best one. It, you know, it opens up and you have Droid Depot in front of you. You can go to the right, you can go to the left. If you go to the left, you have even more choices after that. Now you can go upstairs, or you can go keep going to the left. Then you'll pass two more staircases, the one that goes up to Ronto Roasters or the one that goes into the middle of the marketplace. Like, all these options are fantastic. And I like that when we get space for that. So I'm very excited for Shanghai Zootopia. That's a big land, you know, big space. Fantasy Springs in Tokyo. And I think that's it. Is anybody else getting a new land? No, that's it. Those two at least, you know, because now Disney's in the business of building lands and experiences. I think we are far away now of just individual attractions anymore. That was a big deal in the past, but now Harry Potter and Cars Land changed the industry in a big way, because now people want an experience overall. They want, you know, to eat. They want to live in the land. They want to eat in the land. They want to shop on the land. They want, it's not just the Harry Potter ride or the Star Wars ride anymore. We need an experience. And that's the industry has, again, reactionary. People are showing them that they want this. So Wizarding World of Harry Potter, Super Nintendo Land, Cars Land, Avengers Campus, Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, Pandora, Zootopia, you know, Arendelle, you know, that's another one. I forgot that one. Arendelle, Hong Kong and Paris. Like that's the next like 5 years of theme park design for Universal and Disney is lands, because people want just more than the experience. They want more than the ride. They want to eat in Arendelle. They want to go to the castle. They want to buy clothes from there. They want all that stuff.
They just want to live there.
My concern with this, and I was curious what your opinion was. You got there. Like I was waiting for a pause that I was going to ask you about lands versus attractions, and then you just got there.
Yeah.
But my
you read your mind.
My question though is, you know, I've talked about this on the podcast before, where I feel that a generic land, an adventure land, a frontier land, a Tomorrowland, whatever, is a better way to go, because people like Star Wars right now.
Yeah.
67 years from now, are people still going to be as excited about Star Wars?
Yeah.
And when you have a land that is so catered to one thing, it's not like retheming Tower of Terror to Mission Breakout. It's, well, what other IP or whatever can we fit in something that looks like Batuu that we can kind of like throw some other thing? Like, it can only be what it is.
Well, yeah. Unless Disney long term is looking at it like it's a parade or like it's a stage
like
show
after
or
so
fireworks.
Many years, and then they're
just
good.
Yep. And then because you could very easily, I'm not saying Disney's going to do this, mm-hmm. you could very easily, that land didn't exist before. So you could close it. And redo, you know, level and redo it. That would be insane. But if needed, that could happen. Whereas Disneyland itself, minus like Toontown and everything within the berm, we'll say, yeah. mm-hmm. I think needs to kind of stay how it is because it's so interconnected. So I don't really.
It's hard to close all of Tomorrowland.
Yeah, back to Tomorrowland. I think it's possible for them to do it since they're proving that they're doing it right now with Tomorrowland that you can close a land to redo a land. But is it good for customer and guest experience?
That's the big thing, yeah.
You know, so like,
well, when they redid Buena Vista Street, they like funneled everybody in a different way, and they had the main entrance to the park closed.
So I think Disneyland being generic land specific,
sure,
is important just because we're very tight on space, so you can't really just kind of keep moving out and out versus other places that mm-hmm. made sure they had plenty of space. It's easier to be able to
right.
keep creating these experiences.
Yeah, it has been done in the past. So I will. It's never okay. like a never say never for it because people like the California Adventure one again. Like when their hand is forced,
yep.
then they have to react in that way. So California Adventure, its beginning being so, you know, did not resonate at all. It forced the hand for them, and Bob Iger. And remember that he actually had to make a choice. And I'm like, I would love to see concept art for it, but he was given a choice of either spending all the money to redo large portions of California Adventure. The other option was to combine Disneyland and California Adventure into one giant Disneyland.
Really?
So making it a one ticket thing.
Yeah.
And filling in the space of the Esplanade and making it one giant space. And
that would have been weird.
That would have been very weird. so he chose to just spin on doing Disneyland. I'm sure there's concept art that he was given to show what that would look like of one big, just giant park altogether. But he was given the choice to, and he chose to just save Tomorrowland or now save a California Adventure on its own by itself. And that was obviously a huge, you know, no different than what's happening to Epcot right now. The entire entrance has been almost, you know, gutted and changed. And again, for the better, it will obviously adjust and change itself. But if their hand is forced in the right way, they will do it. The last time Tomorrowland was closed was for the 98 redo where they shut it off and, you know, and did that. That is poor for guests' experience. Very poor because that was closed for a long time. I don't know if you all recall that. And sometimes it's just maintenance things. Do you remember when Space Mountain was closed for almost 3 years? I don't know if you guys recall that.
Yeah, they rebuilt the track, right?
So that will happen again at some point because roller coasters need that kind of maintenance over time. Big Thunder had its one in, I think it was 2014, 13.
Yep.
It was closed about a year and a half. Yeah. So.
Well, look at the subs. I mean, yes, we had the closure for the park, but 2.5 years.
Yeah, there's a necessity for things. So. There will be a big change depending on what the level of is for Tomorrowland. Did you all, I know you watched Imagineering Story. I already know that. Sure. there was the fun moment. It's like a blink and you'll miss it moment where it was Joe Rohde looking at our Tomorrowland. I don't know if you saw that clip where
everybody sucked onto that. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. He takes away the launch bay and puts it back like to see what it looks like without it. I know 100%, especially from people that I've talked to, that Tomorrowland, that is not lost on them at all. Like they're very well aware. The only thing that needs to happen, the only thing that they're waiting on in theory is one is budgetary reasons. Like this is going to cost a lot of money to do this. And then when is the right time to do this? You know?
I think they have a window. I think when you reopen Toontown and you have a new big popular attraction, it's not going to hurt as much.
Yeah.
If you close down Tomorrowland, because you're going to have such a draw.
Well, and maybe you'll have Splash Mountain retheme.
That's true. You'll have the Splash Mountain retheme. Plus, we have a new land, so you've got more space. Well, newer land. You've got Galaxy's Edge, so it wouldn't hurt as bad if Galaxy's Edge didn't exist. That's just less space, less things to do if you did it. So I think there's an opportunity.
Well, and now that they control reservation numbers, they could just knock the reservation number down a little bit.
And it'll still feel good. A lot of capacity that will be lost for Disneyland. So I wouldn't put it past them to do it because it's been done in the past. And granted, Disneyland is in a very different space than it was in the late 90s, obviously. Yeah. So
they could do it in phases too. They could work through the land, depending on what they're doing. Yeah.
Yeah, because they'll take a lot. And that the guest experience thing is going to be tough because then you're cutting off people from attractions. And then, of course, the locals, the super fans, we know that what's coming. We're also, again, like we talked about earlier, we're thinking about now the first timers, I remember, and I'm sure you all, in theory, have been there or walked through that space whenever we have to paint Sleeping Beauty Castle, we have to cover it, and that's, I'm like, what I tell people that are mad, what's the alternative? That you see the paint chipping on it, it looks terrible. Then you're complaining about a whole nother thing. Like, we have to do it,
Yeah. And it's a big job. You can't just quickly do it overnight.
Yeah, it's not an overnight thing. You have to cover it for, and the end result is great. You either get the beautiful diamond encrusted castle of the 60th anniversary, which is gorgeous. You get the 50th version that had the gold, all the gold on it, or you get the newer version now that has the stars painted on it, and it'll get painted again. It's usually about every 10 years or so. But it stinks because people come in, it's their first visit. Oh my God, we turn Main Street and oh no, it's covered by, a tarp. And granted, it's not an ugly tarp. Like, they blew up Herb Ryman's gorgeous artwork. Mm-hmm. And I tried to sell it to people like, you will never see Herb Ryman's artwork this big. Like, you got to love this a little bit,
This is an experience right now.
His artwork is like 77 feet tall right now.
Yeah.
Like, and of course people are like, who's Herb Ryman? And I'm like, okay, sorry. Like, you don't.
Well,
never mind.
The other thing that we were arguing, obviously not running the business of Disney. A lot of fans, including us, when the park was closed, it was like, well, why don't you do a bunch of stuff while the park is closed? Because obviously you have a property that is not bringing in anything and is still costing money to maintain on some level.
Mm-hmm.
And so people don't think it's like, yes, it would have been convenient to do paint everything while it was closed and they could get it done so much faster. And, if one of the things was an argument's been made about the people mover tracks, it's so hard to do that with people in the park. Yeah. It's like, well, they could have demolished that while the park was closed. But if you're not making any money from a business standpoint, that'd be, shareholders would probably think that was fiscally irresponsible to be doing that
stuff. Yeah. But the other thing was, someone just talked to me about this yesterday when I talked about, I forgot what we were talking about. It was an attraction that was down or closed. The hindsight was 2020. Disneyland was always during that time period of being closed was at the state of trying to be ready to reopen.
Yeah.
So we, in theory, if we knew now that we were going to be closed for a full year, if they knew that, you guys have to shut down for 1 year to let COVID pass, they would have done a lot because now they have an end timetable for it. But we all were waiting for the governor, always Newsom, to say, okay, you guys are good to go. So if we rip up the park and then he's like, all right, you guys are cool. We're like, wait. But we always were in a state of ready to reopen. So obviously each month, I think it was Newsom was like, okay, here's the new rules or here's this or here's this. So we were always in this when's he going to say it? Let's go.
Well, and then it was such a roller coaster too. There were some parts where it's like, well, no. And then other times maybe. And no.
Yeah, the July 17th reopening date for, have been for the, 66th anniversary.
65th, yeah.
65th, yeah. And we're like, okay, it's happening. And then they were like, nope. So if they had known, I'm sure they would have done a lot more because they still had, they still continue to work on Snow White and Haunted Mansion while they were down because those were
already in the middle
The carousel. But if they knew, they would have done probably a ton of work because they would have balanced the future. They would have had an end date. What can we get done in this amount of time? But always trying to be in the state of getting ready because Florida, they closed and opened in 3 months.
Yeah.
So we were always like, when's our turn? And they didn't do other than paint the castle for the 50th. They didn't do any serious work because they were also trying to be in that state of readiness of like, here we go. Like, we're ready because they want to obviously open up to make money and get people back in. And that's why they just didn't do any massive projects because we wanted to have stuff ready for everybody when they came back in for the first
time. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
We can open, but we've actually torn up the whole park.
Yeah,
so
sorry.
Actually, yeah, there's no main street right now. It's just all dirt.
Yeah, it's just dirt. Just use your imagination. It's fine.
And I'm sure you all would have came regardless, though.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The super fans would have been
in there. We don't care.
We live in the Midwest, mm-hmm. and we flew out just for Touch of Disney to just be mm-hmm. in the bubble of the resort. Although we were very sad. Like, when we saw you, we were very sad. Because I think at the time, there was a secondary barrier where you couldn't, like, go up to the fence for Disneyland. Mm-hmm. And it was like, we can't even get close to the gate.
Mm-hmm. Which is funny. Sad. People were putting their hands through the gate to take pictures, of course. Mm-hmm. And then they were dropping their phones on accident and then not being able to reach the phone. So they had to go get security who was on the inside and walk around and get the phone. That happened a couple times.
I hope the photo was worth it.
And they're the ones who ruined it for everybody else that couldn't go up and touch the gates. We had to be physically distanced from the park.
Yeah, then another part of it was people were not necessarily being as mindful to the respect of others. They were all crowding around that center gate to get the floral picture. And Disney wanted to stop the crowding portion of it.
Yeah.
So that was another reason the barrier was brought back, because then no one was crowding in any specific area anymore. But everyone was trying to be at the floodgates that face the floral Mickey. Mm-hmm. So that was another reason why the barrier was put up as well, because you would have 15 people all like trying to get that picture together. And we're like, okay, that's not actual distancing anymore. Right. So another reason. But also, yes, people were dropping their phones on accident, sticking their hand through the gate to get a picture. And then you couldn't reach it. So it's like, hey, can somebody get my phone?
I'd love to work in, I mean, you probably know this because you've worked in City Hall. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. On an average day, how many cell phones and stuff show up in Lost and Found? Probably
Lost and Found is fascinating because you have people, one, who will come back for an item because they lost it, you know, and it's important to them. Then you get a ton of other people who they lost an item, like, I'll buy another one. And we're like, no, we have it. Go get it. You know, so our Lost and Found, we only could keep things for about 3 weeks because we are so inundated with items that we don't have the space for it. So it gets, it goes to an auction and the money goes off to we don't keep it. It goes to a charity or something like that, but we just have no space for it. So we keep everything for about 3 weeks ish. And then it has to be donated to somewhere because it would just become overflowing. So if someone, you'll lose your hat. I'm like, I'll get another hat. And we're like, no, come for the hat. We have the hat, we have it. Cause they find all that stuff unless it's destroyed by an attraction vehicle. Cause things get crushed or run over, then they'll just throw those out, or things are sometimes unsanitary. So we won't keep those with the baby bottle, but that's gross to keep. So we just toss those, but things like hats, ears, we, as a joke, we have not even really a joke. We have, bags and bags of lens caps for cameras. Uh-huh. So people lose a lens cap for their Canon camera. So hilariously, if you in the past, I don't think we do that anymore, but in the past, if you were to say, I lost the Canon to the camera to my lens cap, we would bring out a bag of Canon's lens caps and say, find one that fits and you can keep it.
Yeah, here you go.
Because we just have a bag of them. Like there would be 40 in a bag of people that, and they either get in oh, I'll buy a new one, but all this stuff gets turned in, whether by custodial, third shift that's there in the evening. When a attraction goes down, they walk the tracks, grab everything. It all comes back. So it's just whether you choose to come back to get it is the real question. A lot of people, if it's not has no sentimental value or it's not important, like car keys, a wallet, ID, or phone, camera, they just are like, meh, I'll find another one. But
we've had people that have called that don't live in the area and they've called, Lost and Found a few days after their trip. And Disneyland will mail them stuff.
I was gonna say, they mail it back for free. Yep, they go to City Hall and say, this is what I lost, and maybe they didn't recover the item at that moment.
Yeah.
But then they'll get a call and be like, we found it.
That's great guest service. I think that's amazing. Just shows up at your house later. Yeah. Disneyland pays for it.
We get your address and mail it to you. And if you leave your address, that's when it's fun. That's when it just shows up and you had no idea. Because sometimes you'll call and we say, we did find it and we mailed it to you. But if you say let's say lost a hat and you left your address and this is what the hat looked like, and we find it and you don't call back, it will just show up at your door because you left your address. Otherwise, we'll say, oh yeah, we found that, we mailed it out a day ago. It should be at your house in, a couple of days or whatnot. But that's that fun magic. We've also done really other fun things where kids have lost stuffed animals and the cast members will go out, will take the stuffed animal out and take pictures of it throughout Disneyland. So like you're Mickey went on this little adventure and like went around the park and walked around, and then we'll mail that with the Mickey. So like, that's this is what Mickey was doing while he wasn't with you. Like he wasn't sitting in a bin somewhere. He was out like, he was going to the castle, and he was walking to, you know, New Orleans Square, whatnot like that. So we do fun stuff like that. But yeah, so much stuff gets turned in. We just want people to come back to get it. But yeah, we'll mail it free of charge. If we come back, yeah, we want you to have it. You know, we don't need it.
They don't need the bins. They just have
full of stuff. So much stuff. And it's all categorized in very easy ways. Cause now if you lose something, you go through the Disneyland app and you type in lost and found, and you'll write a report and give a very descriptive detail about what it is. And they will search. Everything gets categorized in a certain area down to like color, phones, hats, you know, if they're Disney hats or regular hats, sports team, you know, coats, jackets, you know, anything that could be lost, strollers that get left behind. Like,
don't forget your stroller.
People do, man.
You would be very surprised by that.
Just get in the Disney mindset. They're like,
oh, I'll just buy another one. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. And then we have it and we're just like, it's sitting there waiting for the owner to come back.
Please, please come back.
We will finish our discussion topic with Philander next week.
Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang. But please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop. And then yous can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World, DL Weekly.
Welcome back to Trivia Land, where we're going to find out the answers to these awesome listener-submitted questions. Dag Teresa, how do you think you did?
Well, I mean, we didn't answer anything to two of the people, so we did not great.
The best we can do is 50%, and we didn't even answer the train one fully either. So my hope is on the animals and pirates. That's where my hope is.
Let's hope.
All right. Well, let's find out. That first question submitted by listener Chris Y. What animals can be seen on Pirates of the Caribbean? You answered seagulls, crabs, octopus, cats, parrots, chickens, pigs, dogs, and a donkey. The correct answer that I was looking for was seagulls, crabs, octopus, cats, parrots, chickens, pigs, dogs, and a donkey.
Woohoo! Good we job. Got them all?
Yes, there is also in our answer an alligator.
Oh, there is! Yes, in the beginning.
Okay.
There is. He's the alligator's in the bayou.
I didn't originally include that in because I was like, is that part of Pirates? Is that part of the back of the Blue Bayou restaurant?
Yeah, but no, it's Pirates.
I left that for debate.
Yeah. But I didn't even think about the bayou part. I was just thinking about...
That's where I was thinking about the parrot from, because the parrot's at the end thing.
Yep.
It's the very end, but you're definitely fully on the Pirates ride there, so... Yeah, so I left the alligator up for debate, but you got everything else, so I gave you correct on that one.
Okay.
All right. Your second question, submitted by listener Donna S. Who was the first regular person to buy a ticket and enter Disneyland? You guessed no answer.
Some guy.
Yeah, some guy was your answer. Yeah,
terrible, terrible answer.
The correct answer that I was looking for was 22-year-old Long Beach State College student Dave McPherson, who started a line at the ticket window at 2 a.m.
Wow.
And he was the first person to be able to be at the head of the line and buy that first ticket. In honor of that event, he has continued to receive a lifetime pass every year since.
I knew that part, that he also got a lifetime pass. I mean, that was worth it, to get up at 2 a.m., to wait in line, to then be...
Yeah, you never knew you were going to get a lifetime pass.
I mean, man. No, I know, but man, that's awesome.
Your third regular round question, submitted by listener Chrissy A. What was the first movie to be filmed in Disneyland, not a Disney film? You answered, no idea. The correct answer that I was looking for is 40 Pounds of Trouble, starring Tony Curtis and Suzanne Plachet, filmed in 1962. It was the first movie that Walt approved to be shot on location in Disneyland.
Wow. I need to look this up. I've never heard of this movie before. Mm-mm. That didn't even like tickle something in my brain. Like, oh yeah, I heard that, you know, I had heard of that some point of being the first movie filmed. I need to look into that. Interesting.
And your fourth and final regular round question from listener Cooper C. How many steam locomotives are ran in Disneyland and what are their names? You answered 5, and you said there was the C.K. Holiday, the E.P. Ripley, the Fred Gurley, and the Ward Kimball. Because you almost got all of them, I gave you it correct. The only one you were missing was the Ernest S. Marsh.
Oh, yep. Dang.
Lovingly known as Engine Number 5.
Yes.
Which is funny because I think that that is not Engine. I think the...
No, it probably isn't.
And your bonus points tonight, also submitted by listener Cooper C. What two engines were present on Disneyland's opening day? You were correct in saying the CK Holiday and the EP Ripley.
Wow, ooh. I'm impressed with that one. High five.
Thank goodness it wasn't the one we missed.
That's what I was thinking. I'm like, it's going to be the one we don't remember the name of.
All right. Well, listeners, how did you do listening at home? How do you feel about how Tag and Teresa did? Do you think you've got some great questions that can really stump them next week? If you think you've got that perfect question, feel free to send that in to us at trivia@dlweekly.net.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.